Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hall.
And I'm Dorothy. And last week, we talked about the frustration of trying to get into IT, trying to apply for an IT job, and even trying to study for an IT certification. Today, we're going to talk to you about how we grabbed that frustration and moved on to try to achieve our goals. My part of the frustration was I couldn't pass the Network Plus exam. So Damien and I kind of sat together and said, okay, what am I doing? I'm studying, I'm watching my videos, I'm doing all this. What is it that I'm missing? And then you came up with a plan. So why don't you tell everybody what you wanted to do with this for me?
So we were looking at, you know, the issue you had trying to pass that Net Plus.
Right.
And I said, okay, you need to play with the devices. And we had done that in the past. You know, you played around with some of the devices, but we didn't really have a good plan about focusing on that.
Because a big part of when we sat down and talked about this, we both realized that, you know, some of the questions in the test were based on practical knowledge. You can, you know, the book will tell you what certain things are, but the practical knowledge in the book is not going to tell you about it. And you realize that really fast.
Yeah. So just because you have books and videos, that's not enough. You really need to play with the devices to see how does all of this go together. And one of the issues I have with IT training is that a lot of times they'll talk about a specific part of IT. So they'll say, okay, here's what routing is. Here's what switching is. Here's what, you know, a Windows server looks like, but they won't put it all together. So what you need to be able to do is look at the whole entire thing, right? How does routing and switching work together? How does a whole entire network get put together, right? So that's what I decided to do. And we're looking at some of the topics they have on the Net Plus certification test. And I'm not going into any detail here because I'm just seeing, okay, they have layer one, which is your cables. They have layer two, which is switching. They have layer three, which is routing. And then there's other things in there like Wi-Fi and your OSI model.
Well, when you said to me is, put the book aside. We're just going to get some of the subjects and play with the labs. And your idea was to design a lab based on whatever the subject was. I was thinking, let go of the book. Oh my God, I've been studying so hard and I still can't pass that. I can't possibly do that. But, you know, it's been a really good experience for me, starting from that little baby basic network to what we have been doing in the past few months. So go on, please.
So, yeah. So the idea here is not to focus too much on the subjects in the Net Plus. So my thinking was, why not just build a network so you can see how all of these things go together? So we had you put together a smaller network, and then I said, okay, we're going to go and make it a little bit more fancy, and we did some of that. So we had your pfSense firewall, we have some Cisco switches, you played around with some Cisco routers at some point, and so then we ended up doing something that I thought was, okay, well, maybe we shouldn't do that because that's a little advanced. You wanted to take your little network and expand on it.
Well, I didn't want to set up the bigger network from scratch, because I hear you all the time when you're at work. Okay, now I got to buy this thing and I got to implement it on this. And then I was thinking to myself, I definitely don't want to do and learn this on the job. What I want to do is, okay, I got my baby network and now I need to make it bigger. I need to implement a device. So how do I do that with minimum impact into the network? And how do I make sure that this happens without me taking the network down? So that's the reason why I wanted to do it like that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Now, the difficulty there is trying to figure out how you're going to modify the existing network to incorporate the new devices and making sure everything functions well together. Because if they don't, you're not going to have a network. It's going to be broken.
Right.
And it's always easier to put together a new network because you know that those devices don't have any configurations on them and you're going to put new ones in there, making sure they all function together. So having to go back in there and modify existing devices, that can be a little tricky. And sometimes when you do that, things don't always go the way you want.
Right. And another thing that I'm not really good at is looking at a device and going, okay, how do I find out if it's compatible with, you know, pieces of the network or, you know, or does it have the services that I'm trying to provide to the network? And that for me, that research is really difficult to sit in there and try to, you know, do that and determine and make sure I don't miss anything. Because, I mean, if I was in a job, I wouldn't want to buy a device and then just go, gee, I just spent $3,000 and it doesn't do what you want it to do. and you're fired, you know, kind of thing.
No, and that's true. And so we're going to get into that as part of one of your future labs you're going to work on.
Right.
But we should describe the existing network you have. So you have a pfSense firewall. Mm-hmm. It's got multiple interfaces and subnets. And then you have the LAN side of the network, which is getting more complicated now, because now you have a collapsed core network design.
Right. The last topic that we worked on, or the last network that you had me do, was a core switch with a couple of floors, you know, or a couple of switches that signified two floors. And you wanted me to configure them and do some VLANs and do spanning tree. And then you had me turn off spanning tree and see what that would do to the network. And I really wasn't, I mean, that was really surprising how the whole thing kind of fell apart. So we're going to talk about the next project also that you're going to have me do. But before we do that, what you did lately was give me a set of questions to see if I understood all the projects that we've been working on. Was that not right?
Yeah, so the questions were designed for two purposes. One, you know, you have configuration questions in there. How do you create a VLAN? What are the commands for that? You know, so some of that we're going to put in the show notes because we don't want to really talk
about
the
Cisco, you know, the commands. Questions and the pfSense questions are commands, and we're not going to bore you with that. But, you know, I think it's important to go through some of the networking questions, because for someone like me, this is what he does to me when he's trying to find out, do I understand what I'm doing? Can I identify some of the things that I have done for what they are and what they're supposed to do? And that also tells him the gaps that I have in my learning, so he can actually come up with yet another lab for me. And I think that is a really good way to do this, because I have learned a lot. And for people like myself, you know, for those of you out there in IT that you are trying to figure out how it works, I think this is a great way to go about it, and we wanted to share that with you. So why don't we share some of the questions that you've given me?
Yeah, and some of these questions are more difficult than what you might see on the Net Plus certification. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
So the first question here is, what are VLANs for?
Okay, so my answer was to segment a broadcast domain, to reduce broadcast traffic, and to enhance security.
So I'm going to start with the security piece, because some people are going to have an issue with that. There is this thing called VLAN hopping. You can do that, and it's relatively easy, but somebody has to know how to do that. So when I talk about using VLANs to separate the networks out and make it more secure, what I'm really talking about here is one subnet, one VLAN. So if, let's say, for example, you have Wi-Fi and somebody's out in the parking lot and they figure out a way to break into your wireless network. If that wireless network has its own subnet and broadcast domain, when they try to find something interesting to try to hack into on that network or on that subnet, on that broadcast domain, they're not going to find a whole lot. Because if that network is only for wireless devices, that's all they're going to see. The server with all the company data that's on there, it's not part of that subnet.
Well, and this is, I guess, where I find it confusing. Why wouldn't this be considered a layer of security or part of security? Because, I mean, I don't know how easy VLAN hopping is. I have no experience on that. But I'm thinking, if it keeps somebody from looking into only that part of the network, I mean, if you can't see the rest of a network, how would that not be secure? And if you can VLAN hop, if you're good enough to VLAN hop, and again, I don't know how hard that is, you can probably get into the network. So I guess my thought when I wrote that answer was, I'm looking at, you know, the isolation of that part of the network as being more secure, that if a person could see the network, so those hackers that have those auto scans that they run to see the easy pickings, you know, the networks they can just get into right away, I think that would be a deterrent. So that is why I said that it would enhance security.
Yeah, and that's perfectly acceptable answer. So it is security in a layered sense, but some people will have issues with that.
Okay, well, now, what about my answer about the segmenting of the broadcast domain and reduce broadcast traffic?
So these two kind of go together. So this is the example I kind of gave you. If, let's say, for example, you work for a large organization and you have hundreds of people that come in the morning to work, and what are they going to do? They're going to turn on their computers. Well, what are their computers going to do? They're going to broadcast for a DHCP server. And when that happens, That's your broadcast traffic. That's a lot of broadcast traffic. When you have hundreds or thousands of people or systems trying to do that broadcast or send out a broadcast for the DHCP server, that may be too much traffic for the network to handle. Your switches can't just, it's too much for that switch to handle. So what happens? The network stops functioning. So in order to avoid that issue, you break up your broadcast domains into smaller chunks, and then your network equipment should be able to handle that. So for example, if you stick with, let's say, a /24 for IPv4 networks, that should be a good size to have for enough devices, and yet not too large so that you run into an issue where you have too much broadcast traffic.
Oh, cool.
So the next question we have here is, when would you use a VLAN?
Okay, so my answer was when traffic is slowing down the network, when we need to isolate a part of the network for security purposes, which you just kind of gave an example of that. And the third thing that I have in there is when we need to segment the network and we want to save costs. And I thought that to me was a really cool when you said, well, you know, you don't need a switch for that. You can do a VLAN. I was like so excited. I was like, wow, you can save money if you're able to do that. So, yeah.
So in the olden days, when you couldn't do VLANs, you had to have a device for that, right? So for example, let's say we have floor one, floor two, floor three, you're going to have separate devices for each one of those. And then there's going to have to be a router someplace to route the traffic for all of that. Now, you're going to have to kind of have that anyway. But if we look at your existing network that you have with your core switch, it's one core switch. It's not multiple core switches, right? So you may be in a situation where you have multiple devices on that network and you want to plug it into a core switch. Well, now you have kind of like a master switch for each floor because you can't do VLANs.
Right.
So when we talk about your existing network that you have a core switch, and then all of your switches are going to hang off that core switch because you have the ability to do VLANs, and then each floor has its own broadcast domain.
Nice.
And so you're saving money there because you don't have to buy a core switch for each floor.
Cool.
So that's kind of how that works. And then see, what else do we have here? The next question here, what is routing?
Okay, so what I wrote was the process of moving data from one network to another network. So from the source network to the destination network, or from a source network out to the internet. And I know you had a little problem with me giving this answer. So do you want to share?
So routing is relatively straightforward in terms of comparing that to what you're talking about when we go to the internet. So when we route packets from network A to network B, you know, we may have one router in there, we may have several routers along the way to go from A to B. So when my packet goes from A into the router, what's going to happen is the MAC address is going to get changed, and that's it. So it's going to have the MAC address of the network interface that it leaves out of that router. And then as it goes through multiple hops, that MAC address is going to be changed all the way along, and then it's going to reach its destination.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about going out into the internet, you're most likely going to have network address translation and port address translation. So that's a different situation that makes it look like the packet is actually coming from that firewall or gateway device that's doing the NAT PAT on that network. So as the packet goes in, multiple things are happening. The IP address is going to get changed. The MAC address is going to get changed. The, let's see, what else is in there?
The port number.
The port numbers are going to get changed. So you have the source port as part of your communications, right? So when I communicate from host A to host B, host A has a source port. Host B has a destination port. So in this case, the source port is going to get changed to some port number that the firewall is going to pick for you. And then when all of that goes out, it's not going to look like it came from your workstation. It's going to look like it came from the firewall. So it's
right. And
it's a slightly different thing.
And I know that, I mean, for me, this is how I was thinking. A router is a router is a router. And I thought of a firewall as being a fancy router with some extra security features on it. We haven't done a NatPat project. While I knew a little bit about what I read in the book about NATs and PAT, I understand now that there is more to it than that. The packet has a lot more different things in there. So, you know, I know it's not like straight through routing, and I didn't mean to, you know, oversimplify, you know, the complex process that it you know, entitles on that. So, you know, that's one good thing. Now we know we need to do a NatPat project.
Yeah, and we'll get there. So the next question, what is a default gateway for?
Okay, so a default gateway, what I have is an access point that a network computer uses to send information to another computer in another network or to the internet.
And while I think that that's not a bad answer, I think one of the things that we need to define here is how does that gateway get utilized? So, for example, you have host A that you're on, and you have host B that you want to reach. So let's say you're going to ping that host B from host A. So I type in ping, and let's say I do it by host name. You know, I type in host B, I hit enter. DNS is going to get involved to translate the host name to IP address.
Right.
And then the system is going to see that IP address. The first thing it's going to do is it's going to say, okay, is this IP address on the same network that I'm on? If it is, let's just communicate with host B. If it's not on my network, I don't know what to do with this IP address. Let's send it to our default gateway. And the default gateway is going to decide what to do with that. It should have information in its routing table to find that. Or if it doesn't know what to do, it sends it to its own default gateway.
So you wanted me to not just do the definition, but to actually tell you how it worked, you know, how...
Yeah, how does this whole process work?
The whole purpose of the default gateway is and how it does it.
Right, because then you're going to understand, okay, when I'm doing troubleshooting and something doesn't work right, hey, did this thing actually make it to the default gateway? We're talking about something that's on another network or on the internet. Maybe there's something going on with our default gateway that's not working properly. So the next question we have here is, what are some tools you can use for network troubleshooting?
And I put in ping and traceroute, which are the ones that I use the most. But I want to say something about that because, you know, usually I set up my baby network, you know, I have my devices all configured, they're all plugged in, and then I go, okay, can they see each other? So I will ping the IP address of one device and see if I can see it. Or let's say that I'm trying to go out to the internet and I ping the internet and I see that, sure, I can reach the internet or maybe not. And then I do traceroute just to see where it stops. And cool thing about traceroute is that you can see the IP addresses throughout the network. That to me was fascinating when the first time that I saw that. But on the last project that I did, I was using my Linux computer and I was trying to ping one of the IP addresses on another network to see if the network that I was in, you know, if I could see it. And I couldn't do that. So, you know, after doing the trace route and everything and being really frustrated, I was using my Linux computer and you had me do route-n so I could look at the routing table. And realized that I didn't have my default gateway configured. So one of the things that I really wanted to say about the troubleshooting tools is don't use them in a box. Don't do what the book says. The book will say ping, and this is what ping does. Traceroute, and this is what traceroute does. You know, don't do that because, you know, the one thing that I really learned when it came to troubleshooting and trying to figure it out and making the OSI model really exciting for me was that these tools work together. You know, you can use ping and then you can use traceroute and the route-n and all of that. And you can look and see, okay, what's wrong with my device? Why can't I see it? How can I reach it? Why am I not able to reach it? So that is really important. And I think that is also the problem that I had with the book. It was giving me all these things. I know what they are. I study for them. But I really never knew how they operate in a live system. And then when they ask you those questions about, you have a network and you can, you know, do this, that, and the other. How do you do this? Blah, blah, blah. You're never going to be able to answer some of those questions that are network related without really having some practical knowledge of the devices. So if you're studying for your test, please make sure that you put your hands on the devices and do a little something because it will just really be incredible in trying to get that knowledge of what you're reading kind of set in your mind.
No, and that's true. And then the other thing I would point out here is that when you're using these tools, you want to make sure that you pay attention to what's on the screen. If I ping something and it comes back 100%, okay, I'm good. If I ping something and it says destination host unreachable, pay attention to that. It's telling you something is wrong. When you ping something and let's say you get 85% good, well, okay, what happened to the rest of the packets? Why didn't they make it?
Yeah.
You need to pay attention to that. So make sure that when you use these tools, you don't just use them and walk away. You have to take in what they're telling you and figure out what does this mean? And learning how to interpret this information from these different tools like ping and traceroute is really important. Like when you're running traceroute, a lot of times what will happen is you'll traceroute to something and along the way you'll see a lot of stars in place of the actual IP address of that particular router. Why do you get that? Well, it may be something that's configured to not give you an ICMP response, which is what traceroute needs to be able to see that. So these are things that you need to be aware of so that when you use them in a real world scenario, you understand what you're getting back and you can actually do something with that.
So you did have other questions, but there was one more question that I think is important because you had an issue with me on that. And that is the last question.
So yeah, the last question, let me see here where my notes are. Okay, so the last question I had for you is what kinds of things can be automatically assigned by a DHCP server?
So what I said was IP addresses and other related configuration information such as a subnet mask, default gateway, and address conflicts. And you told me that that is not enough. Can you explain why?
So DHCP is a service you have on the network. And I think what happens is that people think, oh, I know DHCP. It hands out IP addresses. That's all it does. There's a lot more that DHCP does than just handing out IP addresses. And so what I want you to do is figure out exactly what's going on with DHCP. What kinds of things can it share? You know, what kinds of things can be automatically configured by DHCP? And the other thing I want you to do is to sort of clarify your answer. You know, it's okay, but I want you to clarify more and kind of give a better description of what's going on there. And this is one of those examples where, again, people think that they understand what a service provides and how it works. And it's one of those things where you're only using a small fraction of what's in there. And there are services like even DNS. There's a lot of things you can do in DNS that I think most people don't realize. They think, oh, it just does host names to IP addresses. But there's a lot more going on with DNS than most people realize. And again, you have to do your homework. Understand some of these services that you are using on a regular basis. Doesn't mean you have to be an expert, but as long as you know, hey, there's lots that goes on with DNS, there's lots that goes on with DHCP, it maybe I have to go in there and take a look at the configuration because maybe it's not configured properly. Maybe there's an option I need to turn on. So, you know, it's just something to be aware of.
Okay. Well, I'll do some research on that question because, you know, I thought I covered everything, but apparently, and this is the purpose of the questions. And for me, it does help me because while you're not telling me what it is you want me to look for, what I'm getting from you is that there is more to it than the basic things that I pointed out in my answer. And obviously on my new project, there is something in there that I'm going to need to know. So we're going to put a diagram of the last project that I did on the show notes because Damien has a new homework for me. So basically, this is my new lab, and this is what he says. You are asked to provide internet access to hundreds of users. What services do you need to provide in order to accomplish this task? That's part one, right? And then is how will you configure DHCP? How would you configure a DHCP server on pfSense so Network B and Network C have dynamically assigned addresses?
So in this case, we're using your existing network. And again, you have your pfSense firewall that's on one network, and then you have your core switch, which has multiple networks in there, and then hanging off of that is networks B and C. So how would you configure your pfSense firewall to do DHCP for the rest of those networks? And are there anything that, or, you know, what are the steps and the configurations you have to do in order to make that function? And this one's a little tricky, so you may need some help with this.
Okay.
But it's one that I think you need to go through so you can see hey, I have DHCP servers that are out there on some other part of the network, and I'm buried on this inside network somewhere. How does that process work? How do I get the DHCP service to reach me?
Okay. So, okay, I want to do that to see how much I can get that done on my own before I ask any questions, okay? So here's the lab. You are told that the company is expanding. We designed the network to accommodate the following. 2 additional floors of the office building, 150 devices on each floor, include room for expanding, and trunks should be done over Ether channel. So one quick question, though, before I do this. So you said 150 devices on each floor, which is a minimum of 150 hosts, right? But include room for expanding. So how do I determine expanding? Because, I mean, like, you know, when you do it at work, how do you determine that kind of thing? How do you know how much to allow for expanding?
So that's something you would have to talk to management about. But in this case, we're going to be doing something simple. So when I came up with these labs, I said, you're only going to worry about what's inside one office building. You don't care about...
No WAN.
Yeah, no WAN connections. Mm-hmm. Just make it simple. One office building. So in this case, what I don't want to have happen is for you to... So let's say you get an 8-port switch and then you max out that 8-port switch. There's no more ports left. You don't want to be in that kind of situation. What happens if you get a new employee? What happens if you get a new device like a printer and you want to plug that in? You don't have any place to put it. So whenever you set something up, you always want to take that into consideration. Leave a few extra ports on your switch, and that way, if you have other devices that need to be plugged in, you have room to do that.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to get ready for my next project.
Yeah, and this is one where you're going to need help on this.
Right.
And this is also going to help you see how this works in a real-world environment in terms of, okay, I have an existing network, we're expanding, what kinds of devices do I need for that? Because in your previous labs, we had the devices there, and I said, okay, use what you have. Now you're in a situation where what you have may not be enough, and what you have may not be compatible with the new stuff, and you may have to be
creative.
Yeah, you may have to decide, okay, these devices I have now are no good. Let's get new ones.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to doing the checklist, you know, just all the things that we've been doing throughout all of our shows on how to try to plan for the whole thing and prepare for it and then implement the project. So I'm looking forward to see if I learned that right and how, you know, what I can do.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything else?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we got an email from Matthias. He was sharing tips for learning, and he sent us a link for cybrary.it. And it's a free learning website with courses on Metasploit as well as network and different things. We're going to take a look at it. And, you know, I know you have. I haven't yet. But, you know, we're probably going to take a look at it and kind of see how it works. And do you want to explain a little bit what it is? And
it looked interesting. You have to sign up for an account, and I haven't done that yet. So I don't know exactly what the labs look like or what the courses look like. So I'm going to go ahead and do that and see what it looks like. But one thing he did point out, and this is something that we talked about, when you get a book for IT, a lot of times it's old, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that, right? Because these people are doing research, trying to figure out what to put in the book, and then by the time they finish and it's published, a lot of that information is old. So his approach is to focus more with the online training because that's more up to date. And I would agree with that. A lot of the online stuff that we have, because we have CBT Nuggets, and they're, you know, IT focused. They're all about the certs. You can do Windows, Linux, a whole bunch of different certs are on there. And sometimes they're in situations where a new cert comes out. So you have to wait for them to update that. But they're pretty quick about doing that. So some stuff may be a little bit old, and some stuff they don't plan on updating it because there's, you know, no interest in them to do so. But for the most part, they are more up to date than your book is going to be. Now, in my case, I tend to use a combination of things because there's always going to be some information, especially like if you talk about Cisco commands. Those generally don't change. So you can use a combination of book and online training. And I think that's probably, you know, a combination of the two works really well for me.
Yeah, well, Thank you, Matthias, for sharing that with us. And we will have that link on our show notes for all of you to look at it and make up your own mind about it.
Anything else?
No, that will be it.
So if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And then if you want to send us an email for comments and questions, you can do so at info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.